$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast, the podcast where we reminisce and review movies from our youth. I'm your host, Mark Dittleman, and with me, as always, my co-hosts, Rick Maxian and Brian Higgins.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. That came out strange.
Hello, gentlemen.
Gentlemen. I'm from Soviet Russia. In Russia, we say gentlemen.
Speaking of Russia, you could go to Germany.
Wow, that's like one of my transitions.
I know.
Guten Tag to you, sir. I salute you.
I'm walking right into it.
That's true. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because we did a reviews it this week of a movie that seems kind of long overdue. When you think about movies from our youth, from the 80s, this is definitely one that comes to mind, springs to mind very quickly.
Before we kind of pass it off. Actually say what the movie is.
Well, the movie's called, I want to tell you, the movie's called Die Unterlich Geschichte.
Ah, and
that's
now
the original
title of the movie.
Now
you should play the music.
Well, no, you have to go off of that movie. You have to translate that. That's the original title of this movie we did a review of. Can you translate that for us, Rick? It's Die Unterlich Geschichte. That's the
It's like Sherry
title.
Lewis. It's the song that doesn't
Sherry
end.
Sherry Lewis and Bram.
Yeah, it's like the song that doesn't end.
Well, it's the never-ending story from 1984.
Die Gerb.
There you go. You say
that.
Thank you,
Brian.
That
does not sound awful.
The never-ending story from 1984 and directed by Wolfgang Peterson, who wrote this movie. And he's done a lot of famous movies, so this was kind of crazy. A fun fact about the movie, at the time, this was the most expensive film ever produced in Germany. When it came out.
It's a very interesting subset of qualifiers
So that was kind of interesting. Yeah, so again, Neverending Story. That's a hot one that a lot of people were interested in. Yeah. So guys, what's your kind of first experience with this? I think Rick's, yours is quite interesting.
Yeah, mine is interesting because I remember actually seeing this back in, I think it was like the Movie Loft, you know, like watching it on WSBK.
Yeah, okay.
TV so like watching it there like during the day. And I remember like distinctly, and we'll get into it, and people, this is no spoiler alerts, but like I remember like Falcor, I remember the Rock guy, I remember all of these characters, but then there's bits and pieces of the story that I was like, I've never seen this before.
Well, is it, you think it's a case of you never saw it, or just it's been so long that you maybe just didn't remember?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe it's been so long. I have seen it. I mean, yeah. And I've seen it probably 100 times in the span of my lifetime between the years of like 86
93. Under the impressions you've seen it hundreds of times, but only pieces of it?
No, like I literally think I've seen it probably in
entirety?
I've seen the movie on TV probably.
I think he's changing his story. I don't know, Brian. What's going on here?
I've probably seen it 10 or something times on TV, but I don't think I've ever seen parts of it. Like I must have left the room. Or
it could have been cut for TV or something like that.
It could have been edited for TV. That's right.
Because I'm watching it on TV.
I never owned it. I only watched it on TV.
Okay.
So it could have been cut for
time.
That
makes more sense.
Back in the day, it was always, this film has been modified to fit the allotted time.
Yeah. And so
that still happens.
And so now watching it on, I think it was HBO, has it right now on HBO Go, in case anybody wants to watch it. There was parts of it I'm like, I have never seen this before.
Yeah. We could have some very interesting takes on this because you watched on HBO Go. You watched on Apple TV, and I had the DVD, so I watched the DVD version.
My God.
Yeah.
It's probably mostly the same.
Yeah, I'm sure it's mostly the same.
It could be the same movie,
but
maybe one of us was watching Air Force One.
On Apple TV, all of the special features appeared to be pulled from a German special edition Blu-ray or DVD because there was just like an hour there was an hour-long documentary in German.
Okay, no doubt. You see, that was different from mine.
Did you watch the whole documentary?
That's pretty good.
Not the whole thing. I
Do
watched enough to
German?
Figure out that the whole thing was in German.
Yeah.
And then I said, I'm not going to get much out of this because it's not even subtitled.
He was he was like, Die Atreyu, Die.
That means the Atreyu, the.
Exactly. So, Brian, what was your kind of first experience movie?
Pretty much the exact same as Rick. This was one of those movies that seemed to be on like every Saturday afternoon.
It was on so
WSBK TV 38. There's definitely...
We're plugging a channel that doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
Some late 80s residuals.
Very similar to Rick's experience. I know I've seen the whole movie all the way through.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember like how things tied together.
Right.
And rewatching it, my response was, oh, that's because they really don't.
It's magic. It's Fantasia.
It's just, it's something. But yeah, so it's one of those movies. I do have those distinct memories.
I do. Yeah.
I might even call them fond memories from my childhood.
It was kind of funny when you said fond memories, because I want to describe, when I was thinking back about this movie, the first thoughts that popped in my head, I want to describe as false memories. Because I had this memory in my head of my dad taking me to see the movie and the end credits, and I saw it at the Showcase downtown in Worcester, which is now the Hanover Theater.
I once found $50 there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the movie there.
You were like four.
That's the thing. I was like, I was four. And then I go, oh, wait, I saw the Neverending Story 2 there.
Oh,
that's what jumped into my head.
Okay.
So I was like, that's not what happened. So the real memory came back where I remember this was one of the ones around the time, you know, when I started getting to Gremlins and I would sneak downstairs and turn on HBO.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, turning it on and seeing that rock biter roll in, and I was just like, wow. I was, like, amazed by this creature. So I just remember that was kind of, like, the first thing I remembered about this thing was just, like, because I don't know if I'd seen, like, a live-action movie before this which had such characters like this before, you know?
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I do remember watching it. I remember the rock biter, like you said. I remember the initial, like, holy crap, this guy is massive.
Yeah.
But now, I was like, holy crap, this guy is massive compared to Deep Roy. Who is...
Who I didn't even realize was in the movie.
No, exactly.
We'll get into that. So before we jump into the movie, one last point I want to say is, so when I started to watch this week, I asked my wife, I said, hey, do you want to watch this movie? And she said, no, I don't want to ruin my childhood. And then promptly left to go shopping.
She made a good choice.
Yeah.
She did make a good choice.
She's like, I'm so fond of this movie. I don't want to rewatch it. I want to keep the memory alive in my head.
Yeah.
So, but that's not what we do on this podcast. We reanalyze.
We sacrifice.
We do. We do it for
dozens of listeners.
We do it for the Cinemaniacs. Yeah, yeah.
For all of you people out there, we're sacrificing our childhood.
Yeah, exactly. Jeremy Newt, this is for you.
Yes.
Oh,
so
wow,
let's jump right into the movie. So we start off with the credits, and we got the opening music, that iconic Neverending Story theme song, and you got all these tornadoes and clouds. Now, Brian, I think you had a few points right when the movie
started. Very first thing that struck me as soon as we're seeing the credits is just the first credit that shows up is Warner Brothers and Producers Sales Organization.
Which is very German, I think.
It sounds like you're about to get into a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you think that there was a lot of illegitimate deals that went into
Bernie
making this
made
movie.
Up produced.
Well, it was, and then it was a Bernd Eichinger and Bernd Schaefer's production.
Yeah, it was like Wolfgang Petersen was. It was like, you know, Gunther.
Two guys that he met in the alley that gave him a check. Like, so he could make this movie.
And then watching through the movie, I was like, was this the most expensive movie because they were just stealing all of the money and putting it towards their own personal finances?
Gambling
because
or something.
Because it did not look like numbers. It on the screen as the most expensive movie to be.
You know,
unless Germany had only made like a $30 movie before this.
And back in 84.
They had this into the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. That's pretty much it.
I mean, back in 84, they had all this money, and, I mean, they used it all to get Major Dad.
So this kid wakes up in his bed. He kind of has this dream, and you can tell right away that he's kind of like this avid reader. He's got books everywhere.
Yep.
And he goes downstairs for breakfast, and the dad is Gerald McCraney. And
yes,
I
Major
did
Dad.
Not remember him in this movie whatsoever.
Not at all.
He has a big part.
No, that was it.
That was it, yeah.
But... Okay.
So he got top billing.
He shows up pretty much to just establish the fact that the kid's mom is dead.
Yes.
And that he's got to keep his feet on the ground and his head out of the clouds.
And
keep it real, Bastion.
While he's doing this,
kid's name's Bastion.
He's making a drink out of orange juice and
eggs. I didn't notice that.
He cracked raw eggs.
So
speaking of our wives watching this,
yep.
My wife was in the other room. And I had just turned it on the other day, and she goes, is he mixing eggs in his orange juice?
Wow.
Is this why he's not in the rest of the movie?
Because he has a heart attack?
No, because he's sick from like,
food poisoning. Doesn't notice that his child goes off to the attic of the high school.
Well, you guys noticed the eggs in the orange juice. I noticed the giant slab of butter
that
Bastion was cutting into.
Yes.
It was like a 6-inch by 6-inch block of butter. Well,
and they had cows.
And he's sitting there trying to open a jar, and then Major Dad opens the jar for him.
He could,
and
though.
He doesn't do anything.
He doesn't even use it.
He
right.
just pushes it off to the side.
Yeah.
So but we did get some good product placement as well.
Yeah, I did.
Because we did
that.
Have the Skippy peanut butter and the Wonder Bread and the Ziploc sandwich bags on the table.
I saw that. Good for them.
So the other point of the dad was
that
to
funded
his dad,
Gerald McCraney.
He talks.
Good job,
he talks to
producers,
him.
Sales organization.
He talks to Bastion and says how, you know, he can't focus in school. His grades are dropping. He won't even try out for the swim team. Come on, Bastion. And this really weird comment, which I feel ties into, like, the horse later in the movie, how Bastion wants to ride horses, but he's afraid to, which doesn't really ever come back again, except that there's a horse later in the movie.
There's a horse.
Because he doesn't ride a horse later.
Nope. He rides a creepy dragon dog. Yep.
Wait a second. I did not catch that at all.
You didn't hear that? He goes, I'm very disappointed in you, Bastion. You didn't try out for the swim team. And I know I've been trying to get you those horse riding lessons, but if you weren't so afraid.
It's not even, but it's
They're
not
in
even
the city.
But it's not even foreshadowing.
Horses.
So, you know, to get to Brian's idea of like some of these things, they weren't even connected at all.
Yeah.
This is foreshadowing, but
nothing.
A terrible version of foreshadowing.
It's foreshadowing nothing.
I mean, it's saying there's a horse coming.
The most
in.
That it's doing is it's establishing the dad as kind of being like, hey, son, you need to keep your head on straight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Stop living in your world of fantasy, drawing unicorns.
Yep.
Like, you can't live a happy life in
Did
the world
ever
of fantasy.
Did you draw unicorns?
I do not recall ever being a unicorn drawer. I couldn't really draw horses, though, so I was missing the fundamental base.
You just had dogs with horns on them. That's kind of weird.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So Bastion walks to school in the city. Now, again, I just want to bring this up. So the first time I saw this movie, I feel like, because we all grew up in the suburbs, I feel like this is the first movie I saw where a kid was going to school in the city, and it was strange for me because I was not used to a city environment. So seeing like Bastion walk through the streets of New York going to school, when I first saw this movie, I was like, that's weird. It was kind of weird to me, you know, an urban environment where I was like, I was almost like, oh, there's schools in the city, you know, because I was a young kid.
Probably the streets of like Munich.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So the bullies chase Bastion down the street. They chase him down this alley and they kind of throw him into this dumpster. Which I remember as a kid being like, this is really aggressive.
The dumpster appears to be like full of
spaghetti.
Hay.
Oh, I thought it was spaghetti.
Yeah, no, it like, did look like hay. I agree with Mark, too. Like, if you watched it quickly, it looked like, oh, man, there's food everywhere.
He's got like linguine in his hair or something.
But it was hay.
Yeah, like when
it was
he got
like, we want to
make
sure.
Again, there's horse riding lessons somewhere in the city.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's where the hay comes from.
That's it.
What's going on?
It's all about a horse.
So
can we link this back to, you know, how, like, Grease, like, in the movie Grease, like, the
I'm
rumor.
I'm not getting this connection.
No,
What's
no, but, like, the rumor of Grease was when the lady was saved, she wasn't actually saved, and she actually was in a coma, and the whole movie is her being in a coma, and she's dreaming the whole
what
movie.
What lady is that?
Is that Sandy?
Yeah.
Sandy so, gets hit on the head at some point?
No. In the beginning of the movie.
When she's having the summer
she's
lovin'.
Saved or something. And the rumor was that...
Have you ever seen Grease, Rick?
Yeah, I don't know. The rumor is that she is having this whole movie, and it's like it's all...
The whole high school experience is in her head?
No, she's in a coma.
I've never heard this
theory. I'm rejecting
ever.
This wow. theory.
No, okay. no, you could look it up.
I reject it.
You could look it up.
Reject
Summer
it.
Summer comas had me a blast. Bastion gets out of the dumpster, and the kids are like, what are you doing? They chase him.
Yeah, then they just chase him again.
And he hides in this bookstore where this grumpy man is in. I love this character.
But there's no way that they didn't see him go into this bookstore.
That's true, yeah.
Like, he goes in the door, and they run by, like, 3 seconds later going, I think it went that way.
Yeah.
And they run right past the door.
Yeah.
Like, come on, bullies. Get your shit together.
And this man runs this bookshop. He doesn't like kids. He's kind of putting down Bastion, and Bastion kind of proves himself by kind of revealing how much he reads. It's like
read
a reading
Tarzan
test.
I read Tarzan and Treasure Island. I love stuff.
Not comic books. He thinks he reads comic books. And he inquires about the book that the man's reading, and he kind of says, like, most books are safe, but this one is not. So let's hear a little bit about this mysterious book that this old man is reading.
Have you ever been Captain Nemo, trapped inside your submarine, while the giant squid is attacking you Yes.
Weren't you afraid you couldn't escape?
But it's only a story.
That's what I'm talking about. The ones you read are safe.
And that one isn't?
Don't worry about it.
But you just said it was...
Forget about it. This book is not for you.
Brian, so have you ever been Curious George, getting into trouble and saved by the man in the yellow hat?
I'd like to just imagine that it's this guy's erotica.
He's
writing fan fiction.
I just thought that this guy should say diabetes at some point in time. Like that,
you wish he was Wilford Brimley?
He was Wilford Brimley adjacent.
That's true. But the whole thing is, he says this book's not safe for Bastion, and then he goes to take this phone call. Bastion looks at it. He sees this,
and then
like,
he steals the book,
intertwining snake symbol on the outside.
He just takes the like.
He takes the book.
He leaves a note.
Did you notice that the guy is like happy that he did it? He was like prompting him, and this always
why he did it. But
it made me think of that Simpsons episode where. That waitress that always goes, I like that, and they steal her trailer, and she goes, they're stealing my trailer. I like that. You know, it's kind of like the same thing. He's like, he's stealing my book. I like that. Like, he was kind of into it.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I was like, why is that immediately the first thing you think of as a child?
Steal the book.
Like, I read books. Yeah, I like books. I can't read that one. I must take it from you.
That is like child psychology 101, though. If you say you can't do something, they want to do it.
Yeah, but stealing is different. Maybe he grew up without
a
mother.
Not when it comes to... He did.
What if that's his future self?
Oh.
There's a theory for you, Rick.
Oh, I like it. I like it
a lot. He was in a coma the whole time singing Grease. So Bastion gets to school, and he's kind of late for his math test. So he decides just not to go into the class.
This classroom door. Can we talk for a second about this classroom door?
Very jail-like.
Like, yeah, like I was like, is this school a prison? Like he has to climb up
on
a platform to look in the tiny slatted window to see that they're already taking a quiz. He's just like, math quiz. Oh no. Yeah. But like there's not like a full size window or anything on the
door.
And
there was a conveniently set up chair next to it so he could stand on it and look through the window.
I was like, I don't know what's going on here. So he's like, I gotta go run away. To the attic.
To the attic. Well, I was going to say, this is my favorite part about the school. There's a creepy attic with dusty, with all the like skeletons.
But to get into this attic, there's a key in a thing that says attic.
Yep.
Like in case of emergency, break glass.
It's broken already.
To get to the attic. Why? Why does this exist? It's just essentially a plot device with, oh, well, we need to give him a private place. Yep. Why can't he take the book, see that there's a quiz going, and go home and sit upstairs in his house?
Because then they have to pay Gerald
McCraney
again.
But the attic has creepy things. It's got wolf heads. It's got props from plays, I guess. It doesn't seem like anyone's been up there in 15 years. And he'll just take a dusty blanket from the floor, drape it over him, sit on a mat ball type of gym mat that's up there for some reason.
Yeah. I just don't get why the key is so easily accessible. Yeah. Like,
well, maybe the other kids go up there to make out.
None of them do while he's reading his book.
That's true. So he starts to read the story.
Maybe he's not dreaming it yet.
And we get to this forest scene. Now, we meet these three characters. Now, one is called Teeny Weeny. This is a guy with a top hat that rides a racing snail. And that's Deep Roy, the tiny actor Deep Roy, who I had to describe to my wife as the guy who played all the Oompa Loompas in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, if you're not familiar with him. So that's one of the
He was also in Big Fish.
He was in Big Fish.
Which is a better Tim Burton movie to reference.
Yes, yes.
He's been in a lot of movies.
Lots of movies.
Yeah.
So he's that. And then there's a guy who's a night hob. And he's kind of like this crazy haired guy that rides a bat. And then we meet the epic rock biter, who's this giant rock guy who rides this tricycle, I'd say, or bike that kind of looks like a steamroller.
It's almost like a rock penny farthing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yep,
Or like a stone Segway.
Okay. I like that. Stone Segway. That'd be a good band name. And he shows up and he eats these characters and he eats a rock.
Wait, what type of music would that band play?
Classical? No, I know you were going for the rock.
Rock music.
I know. I skirted the obvious answer.
And is there like a thing where we can put on this podcast that says caution may include dad jokes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what this podcast is all about.
That's where the explicit tag comes in.
That's my entire humor. And one of the meaning things, number one, I didn't remember that Deep Roy was in this movie. And number two, it is not his voice.
No, no. Not at all. Everyone's voices seem to be very badly
done. They do, yeah.
But here's the problem. They're speaking English.
Yeah, his mouth is moving. Like, speaking English. They just chose to replace his voice.
Yeah. But the guy who, like, voices him is so, like, emphatic. He's like, Nighthub, no! Like, he's like...
it is not Deep Roy at all.
No.
It's awesome. They're having this conversation. They're talking about how all the rocks are gone. And they're talking about how all these things are kind of disappearing. And this is kind of the warm-up to this... They're talking about this phenomenon that's going throughout Fantasia. Fantasia is the world they live in.
Yes.
This thing called the Nothing that's
the
coming.
The Nothing.
And they were all kind of sent there, and they're all kind of like ambassadors from the land that they're from. So let's kind of hear a little bit about how these guys talk and how they all have a mission.
Was this
a mission.
Like a UN meeting?
Yeah, kind of a little bit. Yeah, I'd say so. Oh. It's kind of like they all have a mission and what they've been sent to do in order to kind of address the problem.
Nighthub! This could be serious. Rockbiter, what you have told us is also happening where I live in the West. A strange sort of nothing is destroying everything.
Yes. We Nighthubs live in the South. And it's there, too.
So, it's not just in our part of Fantasia.
Maybe. It's already everywhere. Maybe our whole land is in danger. What can we do?
My people are sending me to the Ivory Tower, to the Empress for help.
We are the same.
We are on the same mission. After all, if the Empress can't save us, who could?
That's Deep Roy talking.
Yeah,
there.
It's not, though.
So they all take off for the Empress because they think
shallow
she's
going to... Roy.
Right. Yeah. They think she's going to solve everything. So Deep Roy, teeny weeny, takes off on his racing snail. And the Nighthub takes off on his bat. Now, I've got to turn to Rick here. The flying bat effects.
This is one of those movies where it was just terrible.
So this is what... Like,
the blue screen, you could see the lines
and
everything.
The blue screen was very difficult
like,
in this movie.
Like, when Rockbiter stood up and it showed the thing away, you could tell Deep Roy was an action figure, like, okay. On a table. Like it was bad.
But there's such a contrast in this movie, and we'll get... into it more when we get into more of the effects. But
yeah.
The blue screen stuff is very difficult, but like the Rockbiter himself is pretty awesome. Like when there's something
it
practical.
Is good. The only thing that I
like
didn't
a practical,
like,
he's like, he looks like he could be like a Jim Henson creation. And
he does look like a Jim
Henson. He looks
and,
cool.
And same with the snail.
Yeah.
They're stationary.
They're
very
with the
Jim
snail,
Henson.
Where the snail's not doing blue screen. They're just clearly pulling this model.
Yes.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But when you have the flying bat in the air, it's like,
yeah,
well, there's some okay creature design.
Yeah.
Watching some of the special features that were actually in English, like everyone was just like, you know, we were working with the top of the line special effects
at
with
the
this,
time, it was,
with this
I
new
think.
Technology called blue screen. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure blue screen has been around
since
in some
like
form
Star
since, like,
Wars. Yeah.
Since like the 1940s. Since like Thief of Baghdad, they've had some form of blue screen.
Of some sort of cutting in. Yeah,
yeah.
No, exactly.
Like it was not that new. Maybe in Germany.
Like,
maybe it
was
new
more,
for them.
I think that was more like film.
It was like, if I haven't seen it, it's new to me.
That's true. It's the whole must-see TV, NBC motto.
Now, it does not hold up at all. Some of these movies do hold up, but this did not. It's still like I could imagine seeing this 30 years ago and being like, holy crap, because it's new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I could be like, oh my God, that's amazing. You've got a guy riding like a snail. You've got this rock.
And
like,
the Rockbiter involved a lot of puppeteers.
Oh,
yes. Work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The Nothing.
The Nothing is represented by kind of like these clouds that keep coming in. And you see like trees being uprooted, everything like that.
This
finally,
is very model.
The cloud effect was actually, it was shot from below in water, and they squeezed ink into the water to make those crazy cloud
squid
effects.
Ink?
That they repeatedly use in the opening credits and every other time they needed to show the Nothing.
It was just that go-to shot, you know? And they finally reach the Ivory Tower, which is beautiful and comes along with its own theme music.
It looks like the
this
Space
is the
Needle.
Ivory Tower.
Like, it looks like they just took a picture of the Space Needle.
It's kinda,
and, like,
the music kind of sounded like Flashdance. It was like, din, 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 what a feeling. Get some ivory.
I don't remember that part at all.
So inside the Ivory Tower, you kind of see
this
meeting.
This must have been in the, like, longer DVD version.
Yes. Yeah. You meet this council that are getting together. Now, the main guy that's talking, I kept calling him Dumbledore Man. Because he kind of had, it, and you, his name was what? His actor's name was Moses Gunn?
Yeah, I kept calling him Dumbledore.
Okay, hey, there you go. You were on the same page.
Yeah.
I called him Dumbledore Man.
I think his name is Chiron.
Chiron. And some of the other creatures that live in Fantasia that are there, are there's elephants. There's people with multi-faces. There's
like bobblehead people.
Big head guys, like those like Easter Island guys. There's a giant fish. There's a big fish.
Yeah,
there
like
you go.
A fish head with feet.
Yep. And there's a mushroom guy.
It was definitely like the poor man's Mos Eisley.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all
like,
right.
Like, we need some creature design.
I was
going to
say that
an
the
elephant.
Poor man's like Senate from like episode one, because this wasn't a cantina of ruffians.
Well,
this was like a meeting.
This
of...
predated episode
that's
one.
Yep.
You know, I got the vibe more of the cantina of let's have a bunch of crazy creatures
okay.
in one place.
I was just thinking it was more of like a UN setting, though. The Dumbledore Man announces that the Empress is ill, and this is linked to the nothing that's coming. And they, you know, she can't save anyone because she's sick, but there's one chance. There's a great warrior from the Plains people that can help them, and his name is Atreyu! Bastion kind of notices that his bag has a picture of a Native American warrior that's hunting a buffalo, which is a weird coincidence. So Atreyu arrives.
Well, at this point, it does cut back to Bastion.
Yeah.
Did you notice he's like 60, 80, 100 pages into the book already?
Oh, yeah. He's way into it, yeah.
I'm like, this... What we've seen seems like about 10 pages worth of exposition in terms of story. He must be, one, a very fast reader, or two, this is a very large print book.
Yes, the font was size 32.
There is a comment in the I've seen online where by the time he gets to the end of the story, he's only like halfway through the book. So they're like, wait a minute.
Well, yeah, because supposedly, I mean, this is based off of a novel.
Yes.
And the author of the novel famously sued the production to try
like
to
movie,
halt the film from coming to fruition because
why?
It was too like far it. From the it was yeah. too far from what he wrote.
Do
it
you
wasn't
know,
honoring
here's
the
a question. I was thinking during
the
movie.
Is the book actually like still out there? Like
I would assume so.
Well, here's my question. Maybe you guys don't know. Maybe we can look this up for the mini. But do we know if the book is like the straight story of Atreyu, or it doesn't include the character of Bastion or reading the book? Do we know? Like, is it the different worlds, or is it just the...
Or is it the actual world?
Is it just the world of Fantasia, and then they added the human reader for the movie? I don't know. I've never read the book, but that was my question I was thinking about when I knew this was
well,
based
the
on
book
a novel.
Does have
question.
Bastion Balthazar Bucks.
Okay.
Neglected by his father after the death of Bastion's
okay,
mother.
Okay, so he's
why
included.
Is he neglected? The father's like, you gotta do better. You gotta do this. I gotta go to work.
Then he goes,
I gotta drink
school.
My OJ and eggs.
Yeah, like that's decent.
So
he's helping.
Atreyu shows up and they notice that he's just kind of a little boy. The actor's name is Noah Hathaway.
Definitely using Pert Plus.
And he's from one of my wife's favorite movies,
amazing.
Troll.
Back for the
80s.
Yes. And his dad is the music editor of the movie. So I don't know if that kind of helped him get the part.
That helped him get the best themes.
Noah Hathaway. Yeah, his dad was Robert Hathaway.
The
he was
best?
The music editor.
What? But
his dad was the music editor of this movie.
And the best thing to come out of this movie was the actual theme music.
Exactly.
So, there you go.
Amazing.
So he accepts the quest. He's going to look for a cure for the Empress, and that's going to help save the world. And these three rules that the, what's his name again? Carrion?
Dumbledore.
Chiron.
Dumbledore. Dumbledore says these three rules, which are very interesting. He says, number one, you must go alone. Number two, you must leave your weapons. And number three, it will be very dangerous.
That's not a rule. That's like when you get
that's
the
warning,
the fortune cookie that's like, you should have more food.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be hungry later. Order takeout
now.
Waiter.
Yeah. So he accepts the quest and he gets this kind of medallion, which is called the Orin, and it looks just like the symbol on the outside of the box, these
of
the book, these intertwined snakes. So he takes off on his horse, Artex, and he goes past the three envoys, you know, the Rockbiter and Teeny Weeny and that gang.
Who have served zero purpose.
Yeah, they didn't even make it. They were supposed to
like
go.
The Night
and,
Hob, like peeks through the window.
Yeah, and the other two just, like, gave up. They were like, we're not going inside.
Yeah, because I'm guessing the Rockbiter's like,
that was one of the things.
The elevator won't fit
me. Like, why are you in this movie? Like, you didn't even give me any exposition. In the beginning, you're like, we need to go. You just told me about a city you need to go to.
Yeah.
And now we're at that city.
Right.
But
you're
not even taking part of this meeting.
Yep.
Well, and that's where it's like, is this what the story starts with? These three meeting in the woods? Like, there's no agency for their characters.
Yep.
Like, there's no reason to care about them either.
Right.
Like, it's
just
it's,
that the
it's arbitrary.
Cool.
It's like, let's have some creatures.
Yeah.
So we automatically know we're in a fantasy
world.
We
got to do like a Jim Henson. We got to do like a Labyrinth type thing. So, what did Labyrinth?
It did remind me a little of Labyrinth. In the, like, oh, we have a kid in the real world, and now they're fantasizing about the fantasy world, and there's overlaps.
Was Deep Roy in the original He-Man?
Speaking of allusions to other movies, I was going to play the clip, because the next note I had was, and I'm not going to play this clip anymore, but basically, there's someone else on the quest as well. We don't learn who it is, but it's a dark creature that we find out through narration that's also on the quest, kind of competing against Atreus.
Is it Jean-Claude Van Damme?
It is. Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
That
would have
been a better movie.
Van Johnson.
But the illusion I actually wanted to make was at many points during dire situations in this movie, there's a very particular movie sting. Now, did this sound familiar to you guys at all? Take a listen to this. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
I mean, it's vaguely based on the DAC, right? Which is, you know, the Day of Wrath to give a sense of foreboding and fear to a viewer.
That's, well, it's also the any time they kind of encounter any of the pirates and the Goonies.
So, exactly same
mentality.
Yeah. Like when they first go in the attic and find One Eye Willie's map, when they find the ship.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
So,
what'd you say, Brian, that's based off of?
The DAC, right?
Oh, okay. So it goes deeper roots than just the 80s movies genre.
Yeah, like if you like Sweeney Todd, the Ballad of Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Swing your razor, da-da-da-da. That's the DAC, right?
Yeah.
It's used in a lot of movies as kind of the shorthand to give that sense of foreboding of danger leading into
I haven't recognized it in too many. I know I can think about like when you reference that, but I can't think of many movies they have a more modern day reference to it besides this and Goonies. So it's
if you listen closely in a lot of film scores, you will pick up hints of it. Like sometimes in a more classical score,
even in Home Alone, when they do the Christmas music, like
out there,
they start playing the music like he's got to get back to the house, and it's the same stylish, even though it's actually Christmas.
In Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame, like they explicitly have. In the prologue, a section where they go DAC, right? Because they're chasing the gypsy mother of Quasimodo, like they do it to give you that sense of foreboding of danger.
Yes, well, in the danger and kind of that was I was kind of we just kind of skipped over here was that this creature called the Gamoric is also kind of going after this quest here and. It's like a wolf-like creature that
you
don't
get
to see.
Wolf.
Yeah,
it's a big bad wolf.
You just get to see a first-person shooter view of it, basically, for most of the movie.
But like
well,
the
I mean,
eyes
you
are
see
scary.
His eyes from the shadows.
Yeah, you do.
See the
yeah.
eyes in the
with
shadows,
the lightning bolt.
It's not bad. It's actually like kind of like oh god, it's kind of scary.
Well, no matter every time he showed up, it was terrifying as a kid.
Yeah.
But then every time he showed up, it also appeared to be a different puppet.
That's true.
Yes.
So going back to Treyu's quest, so he's, after a week, they said, he's came up with Zilch. He hasn't found anything. He's with his horse, Artex. And again, we were like, okay, is this the horse that Bastion's going to ride at some? No, that doesn't come back ever around. And Bastion is following along, and I was telling Rick, the times Bastion, like, talks to himself, it's just weird. I don't know. I understand,
it is so
like,
awkward.
It's showing he's part of the movie, but, like, they stop to eat, and he's like, I think we should eat. That's a good idea. And he goes, that's a great idea. And probably one of my favorite lines of the movie is when he takes one bite of his sandwich and goes, no, not too much. We still have a long way to go.
Yeah, why is he rationing his sandwich? And by the way, we never saw him make the sandwich. I guess he did use that jelly.
Did, yeah, it's just got
eventually
a whole lot of butter on it. It's a butter that's sandwich. That's it. Yep.
Yeah, it's just a big chunk
big
of butter.
Old butter sandwich.
It's actually two slices of butter.
Yeah,
butter
and
Sammy
some jelly.
So I like this kind of list of places that Atreyu's gone to kind of give the world of Fantasia, because now he's in this like dark swamp, because after he went to the Silver Mountains and the Desert of Shattered Hopes.
Do you think someone's actually
the
mapped
Crystal
out this
Towers
movie?
They might have. Yeah, like a Hobbit type scenario. He's now in the swamps of sadness.
Yeah, so instead of showing you all of these locations,
yep,
we're just going to go to the swamps of sadness,
where he's looking for Marla, the ancient one. This is a very muddy, like, land with swamps, and Bastion's reading that it's a place of sadness, and if you let the sadness sink into you, you'll sink into the swamp. Now, I knew it was coming from this movie, because I remember seeing this scene, and I hated this scene. So as soon as they're walking through the swamp and Artex stops, I skip to the next chapter. I can't even watch it.
Okay.
I still can't watch the scene.
So with this scene, I have questions.
In my mind,
this was much later in the movie.
Gone on many adventures with Artex.
My memory of this was, well, I mean, that's one of the things. Like, we hear about all of these adventures that he's had, but we don't see them. And that takes away a lot of the emotional depth beyond just like, oh, the animal died. Why is the horse sad?
Yeah, why does the horse suddenly get sad and give up?
Like, it's just like, oh, you only sink if you're sad. Why the fuck is the horse sad?
I don't know.
He's got a cool life. He gets to run around. He's got a buddy.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah. I skipped this part. I couldn't even watch it.
I
skipped right
this
over.
This is one of the parts, and I think maybe I just shut it out from my memory.
You blocked it out.
I was literally like, I may cry.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're showing this horse dying.
Yeah.
But the horse
the
is just...
The kid can't do anything.
It was
But it's
brutal.
It's like resigned to this.
Yeah.
It's just like, nope, I'm sad. Yeah. Going into the swamp.
He turned into Eeyore.
There was an urban legend that the horse actually died.
That's not true.
Which is not true.
Right.
No.
Thank you.
But,
thank you for
like, they lowered him on a platform, and
no,
they had to keep doing it so he would grow accustomed to it.
He's in a coma. This whole movie happens in a coma.
The horse was in a coma.
This is the horse's dream, in my mind, like putting
the movie back together. Like, this scene was right before that final encounter with the Gamork.
Yeah,
like it was like, okay, you know, we have to see the journey go through, and he's with him for so long and all that, and just like, oh no, it's like third scene in the movie.
Yeah,
we're gonna kill a horse.
Yeah, it was. Well, bottom line
sad.
Is I wouldn't watch it, so I skipped ahead.
Well, and Bastion is sad, too.
Bastion's sad.
As demonstrated by the least realistic crying I've ever seen.
Your wife would have been like, you've just ruined my childhood, like, entirely. Not from the terrible movie, but just watching a horse die.
Well, she probably remembered that part. I mean, because that part does not... Like, the effects don't look bad in that.
No,
it looks too realistic.
It's because they got a horse on a platform in a swamp.
Yeah. That's
and
why
they're just
I can't
lowering,
do it.
They're just lowering
I just
the
can't
platform.
Do it. Let's move on. I'm done with the horse. Please.
Let's spend 8 more minutes on the horse.
All right.
Well, let's just mention that Bastion's tears appear to be coming out of his pores. Like, they're not coming anywhere near his
eyes.
No,
they, like, sprayed him.
Yeah, like, he just got water dripped on him, and they're like, pretend you're sad, kid.
This is when they told him that his paycheck was not even close to John McCraney's.
So Atreyu's kind of walking through the swamp, and he sees Shell Mountain, where Morla is supposed to be. He climbs it, and then all of a sudden, the mountain rises. Because the mountain, guys, is Morla. She's a turtle.
Boop, boop,
so the more I watch this, though, the more I feel like, all right, I said Labyrinth, but didn't Dark Crystal come out before Labyrinth?
Yes.
So did Dark Crystal come out, like, before this? I'm going to say Dark Crystal came out probably, like, a year or two before this, and they're just trying to recreate that aspect of things.
Okay.
On a cheaper budget.
Dark Crystal was 82. Yeah, it was 2 years before this.
And this was 84.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to recreate a lot of this stuff on a cheaper budget.
Well, like, a German budget.
All right. A German budget.
The largest German budget in history.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of money to go with.
So the shell rises.
$28.
We get best American
Deutsch
ever.
Marks.
Gerald McCraney and Deep Roy.
He's the actor from Simon and Simon.
Deep Roy.
He is wonderful.
He was probably in the movie Dark Crystal. We should go. We should have
no
him in this.
To that movie.
What?
There's no humans in that movie.
That's why I think maybe he was in it.
So Atreyu falls off and he kind of climbs this tree to encounter Morla, who's this giant turtle. Bastion screams.
Yeah, he's just fucking screaming at the turtle.
Atreyu hears it, which is like, uh-oh, now he's blurring the lines.
Oh, what was that sound? Why did the sky scream?
Yeah, Bastion... And clearly it's supposed to be like, oh,
wait,
he's the one from beyond the realm of Fantasia.
The realm,
like,
yes.
Oh, like it's he's the chosen one. But it's just like, why? You're reading a book.
Brian, let me follow up your sigh on perfect. Morla with listening to her talk.
Morla, I bring terrible news. Did you know that the Empress is very ill?
Not that it matters, but yes, actually... We don't care.
If I don't save her, she'll die! There's a terrible nothing sweeping over the land! Don't you care about that?
We don't even care whether or not we care.
That's like more or less catchphrase. Not that
this
matters.
This is one of those scenes, though, where it's just a straight, like, cut scene screen. Like, one picture of the turtle, one picture of the actor. Like,
yeah.
They're, like, barely ever in the same thing. I'm like, did they just film this in, like, two separate locations?
And I have
like,
to know
one person at a time.
I have to know 10 years ago when this was on TV, this is when we had turned it on, and my wife was like, shut it off. I don't want to watch.
No.
It's going to ruin my childhood. No. So that was, like, the first attempt. But I also want to mention, so one of the other ticks about Morla is that she keeps sneezing because she's allergic to Atreyu. I thought it was interesting, Brian. It was almost like a rule of three or a fake rule of three because she sneezed twice and then the third one, which you expected, she then held it. So it was like, okay, they're playing the rule of three trick here, you know,
it was Chekhov's sneeze. Yeah. I needed that third.
Exactly.
But like, did you watch a few years ago, there was the Jim Henson Creature Shop Challenge.
Yes, yes, yes. I love that.
Like,
that was great.
Like the turtle sneezing reminded me of that, where they'd be like, "Oh, we need a special effect for the character. Let's have it sneeze, or let's have it do this." Like I was just like, it's like they sat there going like, "Let's have the turtle sneeze."
The turtle is impressive, though.
And I was gonna go off of that. I was gonna say,
I'd say it's more impressive than Rockbiter
compared to a couple characters we're gonna meet later. The turtle, at least, although just the head moved, seemed a little bit more realistic than a few characters we'll meet later where just their faces could move. And
no,
like, well, she had a reason
it seems
why
like
her
a
face.
More... Yeah.
The bat was awful. Rockbiter was good.
It seems like an easier character
this
to work.
Is
more traditional puppetry.
Yes, 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 yes.
Because it's just like, okay,
it's the face.
I'm a turtle.
Yeah.
How big do you think this actually was, though? Do you think they actually made it huge, or do you think it was
like
there's
a
lot of miniatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think this was funny because after seeking out and finding Morla, the Ancient One, she was basically like, no, there's no way to save it. I can't help. Go find the Southern Oracle. Because she was not helpful whatsoever, except for she basically passed the buck.
And okay, they kept saying, like,
she passed
kept saying we.
The Bastion buck.
She's like, oh, we. And he's like, is there more than one here? No, I just talked to myself.
Yeah. So let's track Atreyu's quest so far.
Yep.
So he let his horse die. He
we
met a turtle
that
did nothing. He's not doing too well. He's not getting passing marks on his.
The more you talk about this, the more I'm like just devastated.
He's getting bad marks, just like Bastion on his math tests. So the school bell rings,
did
which kind
of speaking of Bastion,
yeah. It kind of takes him out of the book for a bit. So he goes downstairs, and he notices that school's over. He's there by himself. School's out. Oh, God. Don't don't you even, Kanicki.
I don't think I've actually ever seen that movie.
Kanicki.
Yeah, Kanicki. So he goes back up to the attic, even though it's after school hours, and the stuffed wolf head kind of almost lands on him.
Why doesn't he go home?
Then he'd have to talk to his dad about...
Because Gerald McCraney doesn't actually show up anymore in this movie.
Well, he shows up, but he's very military-esque. He's a real major dad. He doesn't want to deal with that.
He's a major dad, but a minor character.
Yeah. Oh. Cha-ching!
But yes, he goes back for some reason into the attic, being like, okay, I guess I'm going to sleep at the school tonight.
Yeah.
And
in
then,
my dusty blanket.
And a wolf head just flies down at him.
Yes.
So he's just like, okay, guess I better read about the Gamork again.
So the Gamork is running after Treyu, who's kind of sinking into the mud.
I kept thinking and Gamora. From the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Like, this sequence, especially the Gamork chasing after Atreyu sinking in the mud.
Just
like,
his head.
It's just his head, and it looks so
awful.
Fake.
And Mark will get into this. We're introduced to a new character.
Well, because the Gamork almost gets Atreyu, but he gets saved by this not very great effect coming through the sky. But this is probably the most iconic character of the movie.
It is the
Falcor.
Most. Yeah, Falcor.
He's just bobbing and weaving and zigging and zagging.
No, Falcor
the
is
sky.
The movie. I mean, the rest of the thing is like, oh yeah, there's a kid, there's a book, whatever. Falcor, flying dog.
So he picks him up right before the Gamora.
Dragon dog, I guess you'd call him.
Well, you know, this was one of the things, seeing this movie for the first time when I was very young. And then years later, probably be like, hey, I want to read about this movie. They're like, Falcor the Dragon. I was like, he was a dragon?
Well, so again.
So he's a luck dragon.
And I remember that from watching it now. But I remember as a kid, I was like, oh, he's just a flying dog.
Yeah, that's
and
what
then
I
watched
too.
I watched it again, and I'm like, oh, he's got scales on his back. Yeah. Like, this is a dragon. And then he's like, I'm a luck dragon.
Well, let's meet Falcor, because let's listen to how he talks as well, so.
Sneak away.
Yeah. I mean, no.
I like children.
For breakfast?
Never. I'm a luck dragon. My name is Falcor.
And my name is
Atreyu. And you're on a quest.
How'd you know that?
You were unconscious. And you talked in your sleep.
It's George Takei. It sounds like George Takei.
It sounds like Chris Hansen from Dateline NBC needs to walk into the room and ask him to take a seat. Well, I like children.
Going along with that, too, is Falcor.
Like, the first sound we hear from him is,
And going along with that, too,
it's
is
George
Falcor
Takei.
Winks a whole lot.
Yeah, he just
winks.
I think like they just couldn't get his left eye to work.
His
left eye, the right one from our perspective. Like, it was just like closed for half the scene, and then it's winking periodically. It's just...
And going back to that previous point I made, so this character, you saw him flying, now he's sitting on the ground, and just his head is moving, where you're like, okay, Morla, she was a turtle, she was stationary. Makes sense that her head is just moving, but now you're like, Falcor's body's not working anymore. Just his head is moving.
Well, sometimes his leg moves.
Yeah,
I guess. But when Bastion's behind his paw, if you look at the paw,
scratching his ear,
it looked when he's cuddled up,
when he's going
when Falcor is spooning with Bastion.
Yes.
Oh no, with Bastion, Atreyu.
Later.
The paw and the claw, like it looks so blatantly carved. Where it's like, oh, let's add in some wrinkles.
Yep.
And it's just like, harsh line, harsh line, harsh line.
Yep. It doesn't look like
wrinkles at all.
The Southern Oracle from Morla was 10,000 miles away, but Falcor had taken him 9,981 miles.
Yeah, I was like,
so he got you
19 miles away.
And speaking of those kind of...
I'm not allowed to go within 19 miles of that district.
So speaking of like those kind of unconnected scenes that are just described by magic, so one of Falcor's quotes are, having a luck dragon with you is the only way to go on a quest. So it's kind of like that. You can only complete a quest if you have this strange magical creature along with you to kind of take you from point A to point B. So kind of seems like a shortcut to me.
I feel like I need to someday sit down and try to map this movie out using the hero's journey.
Okay.
Because it doesn't feel at all like it's hitting any of the steps.
There's a lot of jumps. We
kind of get the call to adventure when Atreyu says, okay, I'll go to find the cure for the princess. Yeah. Okay. I guess the Swamps of Sadness is the belly of the whale.
Okay.
And then later on, we kind of have the atonement with the goddess, I guess, with the childlike empress. But everything just feels off. Like, is Falcor the supernatural aid? Like, what exactly is going on?
Yeah, he's the supernatural aid.
This is a different conversation for a different podcast.
Yeah, no.
As we talk about the
Atreyu one of those things where it's like, I don't know where they're going with this. And it was literally like, we only have an hour and a half. How are we going to go this much? Oh, let's just throw in a flying dog.
Yeah.
Whoa, we can't call him a dog.
He's a dragon.
We'll call him a dragon. A luck dragon. Done.
So also by Falcor is that there's this light on in this cave. And we learned that Atreyu has some two new friends over there. Now, this couple, this tiny person couple that are in there, I was like, this is Miracle Max
and Miracle
his
Max.
Wife adjacent, you know, basically.
Yeah.
This is a tiny little man and his wife. And I wrote down Engelbook and
Engelbert Humperdinck.
And Urgle was their name, something like that.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
And the funniest thing about is he keeps calling his wife a wench.
How old was he, like five?
He keeps calling his wife a wench because he's like, get to the winch, wife. Wench? Winch?
What? Get to the winch?
Get to the winch, wife.
Are they towing Falcor places?
Well, that's the, he's got like this pulley with a basket that takes him to his Southern Oracle Observatory
that's
station.
True. All right, I'll give it to
you. Because he's an Oracle expert. Now, what did you guys think about how they kind of like, Atreyu was very big. This was kind of like a Gulliver's Travels type of scene. He was very big, and this couple was very small.
But, like a ghetto Gulliver's Travels. Well,
and it was, once again, just like you were saying with the turtle scene,
yeah.
Where it's just cutting from one to the next. So you don't fully get the effect until they're looking through the telescope in a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, wait, they're next to each other, and they're very different sizes.
No, literally, this whole movie cuts from one person to the next person, not showing like more than one person on the screen unless it's, you know,
unless they're the same size.
Yeah. And it's like, what am I watching right now? Why do you keep cutting? Where are they on the phone? Is this just a long distance phone call?
They're doing FaceTime.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
So again, Fantasia observatory. Time. In order to get up there, there's kind of like this Rube Goldberg type device that he can go in this pulley bucket system to get up there. And he's kind of got these binoculars to look at the Southern Oracle. The man, Engelbrook, kind of says that most people try to get past. There's two gates blocking you to get to the Southern Oracle. Mm-hmm. Now, this first gate is kind of like these two sphinxes looking at each other. And most people don't get past it. But let's kind of learn a little bit about the Sphinx per Engelbrook, who is the expert.
Of course, most people never get that far. Why? The Sphinx's eyes stay closed until someone who does not feel his own worth tries to pass by. Ah! Here comes one that looks fancy.
So this, like, classic medieval knight is approaching. Now, guys, what rating is this movie?
It's got to be PG, right?
I'm sure it's PG. And even at a young age, the Sphinxes have very prominent breasts and nipples sticking out of them.
That is one of the things that the book's author took offense to. He said, the Sphinxes are quite one of the biggest embarrassments of the film. They are full-bosomed strippers who sit there in the desert.
Okay. And I think that's a good point, Brian. Perhaps you should read the IMDb sex and nudity guide of this movie.
That is a very good point.
Yeah, we should probably, because this is the only circumstance I can think of that would be representative.
This is one of those times where I was watching it, and then, like, I was doing other things.
But I remember as a kid, I was like, look at those gazungas.
I don't remember them from my childhood.
Oh, I don't either.
I remember this scene scaring me. Because, like, when
it was very tense.
The knight gets killed.
Because the knight gets zapped. He doesn't get through. He doesn't prove his worth. But he does stare at those big gazungas. He gets distracted.
That's probably how you prove your worth. If you don't gaze at the...
But it's not even... So, these sphinx will...
Yep.
But sphinx later... Sphinxies, I don't know. Later in the movie, it's even worse.
Oh, wait.
For the nipple and breast shot, for the southern whatever.
Well, hold off that statement for a minute,
because
I'm going to get into that once we get to the Southern Oracle.
So, speaking of yabos.
Yes, let's talk some yabos.
So, sex and nudity. No sex. There are two nude sphinx statues with female breasts clearly shown.
Wait, two? There's four.
Well, two statues.
The first gate is the Sphinx.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Oh, and the second one is.
We'll get to the Southern Oracle. So that's the first gate, right? So Atreo gets to the gate.
By the way, you ask what it was rated. It's rated PG for fantasy violence, frightening images, and brief nudity.
Who's the brief? Is the Sphinx?
The boobs. I think the statue's there, yeah.
That's not nudity. I mean, that's a rock. I mean, it's carved. I mean, you're saying art is brief nudity.
So anyways, Engelbrook wanted to tell Atreo about the second gate, which he said was even worse. But before he does that, Atreo goes, I'm going to take on this first gate. And he goes up there and he kind of sees all these bodies, dead bodies in the sand and everything like that. And Engelbrook keeps going, be confident because these sphinxes can apparently look into your heart and watch out for when their eyes open. That's kind of the key thing is their eyes open. That's just when these laser blasts are coming.
But here's the thing. Why wouldn't you just run through the gate?
Well, Bastion's running at him because he's like, he's very confident. And then apparently he starts doubting himself. And that's why the laser eyes start opening. And Bastion's like, run, run. And then he jumps and he misses the zap blast.
Do you ever, I mean, have you read a book where you start yelling at the book?
More of a movie, I'd say.
Yeah, no, yeah. Movie is
that's
fine.
A different experience.
Yeah, yeah. No, movie is fine.
A movie is a more visceral experience. A book is your imagination.
Yes.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly. Like, you're not never going to run. Like, run!
Like, there might have been times.
Well,
what
do I
like,
do?
Hold on.
Oh,
the guy explained
that
this
chapter.
Isn't just a book that is safe. You get invested in this book.
That's
you
true.
You become part
Wilford
of it.
Brimley did warn him.
He brought that up before.
That's right, actually. Diabetes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Engelbrook kind of goes back to, he goes back to Thelkor and says how Atreyu made it, we then kind of learn about the second gate. So let's hear about the next obstacle that Atreyu has to then face.
Nonsense! You don't understand anything! The worst one is coming up. Next is the magic mirror gate. Atreyu has to face his true self.
So what? That won't be too hard for him.
That's what everyone thinks. But kind people find that they are cruel. Brave men discover that they are really cowards. Confronted with their true selves, most men run away screaming.
People learn their true selves at the second obstacle. Tall men find out they're short. Bald men find that they have hair.
Yeah,
it's the opposite.
It's the Matrix.
It's just the opposite.
It's what you picture
every
yourself to
time.
Be.
So that's what we learned about the second gate. So before Atreyu gets to that, he's kind of walking through a snow blizzard. And then this second obstacle is a giant mirror. And he looks through the mirror, and what does he see, guys?
He sees Bastion.
He sees Bastion. Oh, no. And Bastion's starting to freak out because he's reading about Atreyu looking at him, which is very meta. So he's like, what's going on? And Atreyu walks into the mirror, and Bastion kind of is like, he's freaked out, so he throws the book across the room. It reminds me a little bit of on Friends when Joey would get afraid of like reading Stephen King's It, and he'd hide it in the freezer. You know, so like Bastion just throws it across the room. That's how he kind of gets the book out of his hand.
I don't know. It was one of those parts where I was like, what is going on?
No, I don't remember that whole mirror scene from my childhood.
I don't remember.
And it might just be because there was no massive effects there. Like, it didn't have enough
literally, it's
of a
just
hook
one
to...
person standing next to it, like, in front of another person,
Around this point, this is where it really was starting to hit me that the movie looked cheap because there was no scale to anything. Like, everything looks like, okay, we have a little platform. And then a backdrop.
Yeah.
Like, there's no depth to any of the scenes. It's just sky behind everyone. Yeah. So, like, between this, the scenes with Thelkor, like, everything just looks blank. And that's, I think, where it really misses out on the whole aspect of world building. Because when you look at some of the more successful fantasy films, like, look at the... Well, look at what Peter Jackson did in creating a world that feels lived in. It was using real environments.
Well, it's more attention to detail, too. You know,
but if they did this today, oh, my God. It'd be amazing. I mean, it'd be amazing. Even change the script a little bit.
Yeah,
I would change
the script a lot.
All right. So change it. You know what? Just remove... a lot of it, but
no, I think this is a story that has a lot of potential to be remade.
It does.
I
mean,
I think it
go
does.
Back to the
I think it's one of those
material,
ones where I'd be upset initially hearing about it, but then I'd be like, all right, I'll watch it. Then I'd be like, oh, it's so much better because they can use actual
You'd
effects
be like,
and
Atreyu.
Not like terrible effects.
Atreyu.
I mean, I love practical effects. This movie fails on practical effects.
So I don't know why is that once the lights, because the lights started to go out in the attic.
It's fantasy.
And I don't know why this attic just had like a string of candles that Bastion could just light. That seemed kind of weird.
They're also very fast burning candles.
Yeah.
Like as you watch the rest of the movie, like he lights them and they're a few inches tall.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they're like nubs. Either he's sitting there for days letting these candles burn or they're very fast burning.
Yes.
And if he's sitting there for days, Major Dad really needs to up his parenting game.
I know. Yeah. He's not on top of it. Yeah.
I guess that's when they say, you know, you're not paying attention to him anymore. That's probably one of the reasons. Like, oh, you can disappear for 3 weeks at a time?
Yeah.
Done.
So moving on
as I got my OJ and eggs.
Yeah.
So moving on past gate two. Now, this is starting to what you were talking about a little bit earlier, Rick. Atreyu gets to the Southern Oracle. Now, the Southern Oracle is just the two Sphinx statues that are now glowing blue.
They're blue.
They're the exact same prop.
Yep.
It was like, what's going on? We don't have budget for a different looking oracle?
It's the Player 2 version.
Yeah,
like they just did a palette
the
swap.
The next level.
This is why I was laughing. I was laughing the whole
time.
It's
the same thing.
It was literally the
same. You couldn't change it to make
these
it look
ones,
different?
These ones were Sub-Zero. The first ones were Scorpion.
Okay, yeah. That's
oh
true.
Oh, my God.
That's true.
Foreshadowing.
Sub-Zero
to
had
Kombat.
Breasts. Well, the breasts were a little bit covered now in the Oracle. It's a little more modest, I'd say.
No, they weren't. When you they looked
they
up,
had like a
no,
like
you
some
saw
scales on
you
top
saw
of it.
Nipples like instantaneously.
Yeah, that's a nipple. It's not a scale.
I thought Rick was maybe you were paying a little bit too more attention.
Rick was watching in Ultra HD. He was watching in 4K.
Yeah, 8K.
So the Oracle tells Atreyu that in order to save Fantasia, the Empress needs a new name. But no one from Fantasia can give the name. Only a human child can do it. And then, in like Clash of the Titans fashion, the Oracle just starts falling apart. Its nose falls off. Its ears fall off. And Falcor comes flying in, picks up Atreyu. And we're like, uh-oh, more Falcor effects. And I did like, again, like you were talking about, like the split screens, when they would just show like the aerial shots, because they weren't showing Falcor. They were just showing clearly just like a plane flying through the air. So you just saw like going into clouds, like up above. That was a kind of a cool shot. It made you feel like you were flying a little bit first person because you weren't seeing Falcor in that shot.
That's saying like in the beginning when the bat started flying, they showed a screen. Just the sky. So that was the actual best effect in the movie was when they showed just a picture of the sky.
Yeah.
When they didn't even have a special effect.
Yeah.
They just filmed
flight.
They just
filmed some sky. Yeah,
exactly.
That's why it was cool.
That's the best one.
So Falcor is carrying Atreyu to find a human child. Now, Brian, I know you have some comments on this, but a note I wrote is that I realized in this movie that Falcor is Dr. Hibbert from The Simpsons. Every time he says something like, we have to find a human child. And so he starts laughing.
It is true.
He's totally Dr. Hibbert.
I did not think of that, yeah.
But you were kind of creeped out by the search for the human child, weren't you, Brian?
Atreyu says, how do we find a human child? And Falcor's response is, with luck. Oh, my.
I'm Chris Hansen.
Yeah. Like, someone needs to step in. Like,
there's no Chris Hansen.
Atreyu, where are your parents?
32 years
Atreyu,
ago, someone needs
you shouldn't
to step
have
in.
Answered when he said ASL.
Maybe that's what Teeny Weeny's role is, but he can't.
Oh.
So Bastion says to himself, he says, a name for a child like, you know, for the Empress, why don't they just ask him? His mother had such a beautiful name. Little does he know that you are part of the story, Bastion. Come on, man. Get on with it.
From where I'm sitting, that seems to tell me that Bastion is going to yell out his mother's name at the end.
That's true. That's
so
what it's setting up.
Let's keep that in mind. Like,
we'll keep that
like
up.
It's kind of foreshadowing, like, okay, like he's going to yell out his mother's name.
Well,
like, that's going to be the name.
You're talking up a point that is a much debated point once we get to it. It is a very controversial point of the movie, and we'll get to that. But apparently the nothing, they have to go to the edge of Fantasia, and like the furthest spot is the Sea of Possibilities. But before they get there, Atreyu straight up falls off Falcor. Now this was...
You should have worn a seatbelt.
Two things about this part.
Okay.
first one, the effect was horrible.
Oh.
Atreo falling off of Falcor.
The whole flight was awful.
But him falling off was, because he was just
lighting
like this
was
tiny,
bad.
And then the second point, though, is I started cracking up. When Atreyu straight up fell off Falcor, I just burst out laughing. I was just like, I don't know why. I just enjoyed him falling.
All I remember from this scene was he just flew a million miles on Falcor and then all of a sudden was like, whoops.
Well, there was like storms coming in.
Yeah,
there
but
was
just,
reasons,
in terms of the technical logistics of the shots, how every single shot needs to like cut off at Falcor's nose.
Yeah.
Like they can't show his entire body because they can't physically show that part flying.
Yeah. Right.
So it's just like, okay,
no, he's
we're
not
just
going
to have him
right
here. No,
the body's not there. It's just Falcor's
exactly.
head.
Exactly. It's just the head.
And in the real world, there's this giant like window in the attic that keeps coming open from the storm. So Bastion has to keep going and
every
closing
time
it.
I'm scared.
Every time he closes it and he locks it up. Falcor is searching desperately for Atreyu. Now this is the famous line that my roommate in college would often say almost at least one time a week. He would just go, Atreyu! Atreyu! Because that's what Falcor was saying. Yes.
I like that that's a famous line to you, yelling out the main character's name.
Yeah, that's when your college roommate often yells out Atreyu.
But
that's what you hear.
I mean, yes.
That's actually just what he yelled
like,
out when he was having
fun. When Atreyu fell, I remember watching it and being like, wait a second, 3/4 of his body is gone. Because at that one point, Falcor turns over, all of his legs are gone. But the body is like 3/4 of his body, but the legs are missing. It's like they had to, I don't know, they had to get like Atreyu on like this, you know, cylinder shape and they had to spin him off. And it was like, where's this?
Atreyu, would you like to get on my cylinder shape?
Yes. I'm very cool.
No, but I mean, like literally, they filmed the head. They filmed the head and then like never added the legs, never added the legs and feet to the Falcor model.
So this gets into a little bit I want to jump into. So the special features of the DVD.
Oh, yes.
Were horrible. They were just like random. You click on something and it would be like
it was
special
the
effects and you click on it and it would be like 3 paragraphs.
It was like the
that
right
was all.
Oh, really?
One of them was like they started off Falcor was just a model. And then after filming it, they decided, we're going to make a life-size version. And that was the whole trivia about the special effects.
What?
It's very interesting, yeah.
I could only imagine the special effects were like, we spent all of our budget on Gerald McCraney.
It's vaguely interesting to watch some of these, like, to watch the iTunes German special features.
Oh.
Like, to just see, like, some of the behind the scenes where it's, like, 800 people standing at switches to control Falco.
Wow.
Or Falcor. Not Falco.
Falco. He's saying put it on the. No,
Shane Falco.
Rock Me Amadeus.
He said Rock Me Amadeus.
Shane Falco from The Replacements.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Keanu. Atreyu's in this kind of, like, city, and he encounters the Rockbiter. Now, the Rockbiter keeps talking about how he's got these big, strong hands.
Yeah,
they
I wouldn't
look
necessarily
like
call it a city. I would say it's just
hands.
A set.
Yeah, a set. Yeah. The moral of the story
I
is
I lost my teeny weeny.
He did. He lost his teeny weeny and his night hop.
And my night hop. You would have thought my big, good, strong
now you're
hands
getting into the same
could hold my teeny weeny.
Oh,
you're
know,
getting
Chris
into the same
no
world as Rick watching the Southern Oracle's nipples right now. So.
Hey, I'm just reenacting. I'm doing an audition monologue.
So he lost them to the nothing,
good,
which is basically
hands
what happens. Atreyu's like, I failed. See ya. Good luck.
Yeah. I wish you luck in your future endeavors. Go.
I'd like to imagine that the Rockbiter was like taking a shit when Atreyu walked in. But like he
do you
he
think
just
his shits are little
on
pebbles?
I would
on
assume
his
so.
Segway?
Like he's just sitting there, he's just like, okay.
Maybe
like
the Segway doubles as a poop.
It doubles as a poop.
You mean a toilet?
No, he doesn't have a toilet.
No, a poop catcher.
Oh, he doesn't have a poop catcher.
They don't have toilets in Fantasia. No. They have poop catchers.
He's a Rockbiter. He must have a poop catcher.
Of course, he doesn't necessarily appear to be a rock swallower.
No,
he just appears to bite the rock.
How does it get to his
belly?
And
they all go falling down in front of him.
Yeah,
he's
true.
Like Cookie Monster.
That's true.
Nothing actually goes into his mouth.
Yeah.
He just gobbles it and lets it all go flying.
Did you like his feet, though, at the bottom of the scene? Like, showing up.
Did you like his feet?
No, like, they were, like, massive.
Rick's got a real foot fetish. How's Atreus? He's looking, Rick.
I don't think we ever saw. We only saw the top half of everybody.
Would you say that his feet rock?
Oh.
Yes, yes.
If only
I would.
Olmec was here.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
I would much rather watch a movie about Olmec.
Yeah. I think that should have
the Rock Biter.
He tried out for the Rock Biter. He didn't get the part. Because he has no legs. He doesn't have any feet.
Wait, half the cast didn't have legs or feet in this movie.
Doesn't matter. So Atreyu goes on to the... He goes down to the city, and he sees all these murals of the adventures that he's gone on so far.
Yeah, he goes down to the Temple of Recaps.
Yes, exactly. He sees Artex falling in the mud.
Like, aww. Hey, did you forget about this scene? Well,
he
here it is again.
He sees him beating Morla. He sees... Was it the same picture on Bastion's bag? I don't know. It was a picture of him. Kind of looked like it. And then finally, he sees a picture of the Gamork. And he turns around. Before I comment on the Gamork, let's just listen to the Gamork a little bit.
If you come any closer, I will rip you to shreds.
Who are you?
I am the Morgue. And you, whoever you are, can have the honor of being my last victim.
Now, the first time I saw the Gamork reveal as a kid, I was like, oh. This is awesome and amazing. Now, watching this again,
scared.
I was like, I was scared too.
Oh, yeah. Scared shitless as a kid.
Now, watching this again, I'm like, this is like a character from the Hall of Presidents at Disney World.
Oh,
like,
God.
It was just like,
the mouth
this is
moving.
The Country Bear Jamboree right here.
Yeah. That's an insult to the Country Bear Jamboree.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I would much rather see Big Al sing Blood on the Saddle than see the Gamorky creepy.
It was
awful.
Super animatronic. I was just like, what is going on?
The eyes were so scary. It's
the
like,
eyes of Mars.
They are like, all right, we're going to spend 100 hours on the eyes, but then only an hour and a half on the rest of the guy.
I know. This was
and
really,
there was someone there was someone was very letdown, ogre over eager controlling his nose. They're like, I think his nose should wiggle again.
Yeah.
I want to make it wiggle. Yeah. Look at me. It wiggling.
So we learned that the
Gamork. Hey, Bill, you can make his ears go.
The Gamork has been working for the Nothing. It's kind of been like an agent of the Nothing.
It's like the Nothing's Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Did this inspire the cloud-based Galactus?
Oh.
From
God.
Rise of the Silver Surfer?
Oh, my God. Yes. I hope so.
That is very...
You know what? It would make the Rise of Silver Surfer so much better.
No,
if it was
I don't think so.
If it was inspired by the Never-Ending
Galactus
Story?
Galactus was the Nothing?
Yeah. I'd say it would make it better.
I don't think so.
Because there was just a back...
There was only one thing that could have saved that movie. You had the Cloud of Galactus. Just freaking shine a quick flash of his face. Let's see Galactus' face.
You kind of did.
No,
it was,
you didn't.
It was
there's no face. It was, watch it again. It's just a cloud.
Yeah.
There's no Galactus face.
I picture his face in there.
When you're picturing the Southern Oracle's boobs.
Well, he sees Galactus' face there, too.
I see Galactus' face everywhere.
Wow. Now we know what Rick dreams about.
In the eyes of children, I see Galactus' face.
With luck. The Gamork says it's going to kill him, and Atreus says, bring it on. I'm not going to go down easily.
I've got this sword here.
Well, he picks up something. The Gamork comes racing out.
Which is
out.
Awful.
This is also, like, the Gamork is basically laying out the point of the movie.
It was awful. Yeah.
Like, in this, because the Gamork is like, people have begun to lose their hopes and forget their dreams.
He explains everything.
So it's in the Temple of Recaps, it's just the exposition wolf being like, hey, the Nothing, it's the loss of creativity
people
and whimsy.
Lost their hopes
like,
and
you're
dreams.
Losing the world of fantasy. You're losing dreams. So that's why this fantasy world's being replaced by the Nothing. And you have to embrace that fantasy to have your dreams, to keep fantasy alive, and Fantasia will live. And that's, to that point, that's where I could see a good modern-day adaptation. Yeah. Yeah. Because you very clearly can play the whole technology taking people out from connection and interaction and the creativity. Like, if you play up that angle, that is a strong angle to play for a retelling. As it is, it's just kind of there.
And his whole motivation is that once people lose their hopes and dreams, they're more easily suggestible and controllable, and he's going to control them easier. But
the Camorque is adulthood.
But if everything is gone, what's left to control?
I don't know.
Yeah. Very deep. Think about that.
I just made that up.
Deep Roy.
The Camorque comes out, and Atreyu's taking this rock that's very sharp. He stabs it, and then you just have a lifeless puppet body on the ground, which you didn't see initially. You just saw the Gamorrek's head. But then you saw it was like, the thing was like, what, 6-7 feet tall by the time it was on the ground?
Blood is shown when Atreyu slaughters Gamorrek.
The end.
Again, this was a scene that in my mind was very epic. And then I was just like, oh.
No, it was like 2 seconds.
He fell on his rock.
Yeah, that was pretty much what
like,
happened.
It was so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been a battle, a trial that he has to go through. And nope.
What?
I'm going to jump at you. Oh,
but basically, he didn't even realize the Gamorrek was after him. So it was like, it was a quick encounter and a quick resolution. Because he didn't even know this thing. He wasn't, like, battling it the whole movie. He didn't know it existed.
Anyway, Falcor in the sea.
So Falcor is swimming underwater, and he retrieves the Orin. And I was like, yay, Falcor, good for you. And again, the nothing's coming in, and it's just blowing away everything. It's like sucking up everything. When Falcor is searching for Atreyu, Atreyu's holding onto a tree. And as he's being pulled away into this windy vacuum that the nothing is creating, you can tell that he is a full man just holding on to
a stunt double. But it is
with a giant wig.
Yes.
This was one of the moments I saw in the behind the scenes because they were very proud of how they did this. They're like,
"Oh, really?
So we had it set up so it was on a lift. So it looked like he was being sucked by the wind of the nothing, but really he was just hanging on to a tree as the lifted him vertically."
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah. They were very proud of that effect.
No. And then Falcor comes in.
Falcor grabs him.
We
awful.
Do see his feet here.
Yeah.
When he was flying into the nothing or whatever.
Oh,
the
that
storm,
was horrible.
It was awful. The movement isn't fluid. Everything about it was like, this is the worst thing I'm ever, like, what happened?
But for this one, you get, like, the view of his feet and the bottom of his mouth to bring Atreyu to safety.
Yeah.
So, Fantasia's gone. The nothing has taken it.
Boop, boop, ba-doo.
And they're floating in space, and there's fragments of Fantasia just kind of floating around. And Atreyu says the Orin will guide them to the ivory tower if it still exists. So it starts to glow, and they're following it. And they see that the ivory tower is still standing. Yay! It's like, it's still floating on its own little asteroid, basically.
Quick to Bastion.
I wonder if he has a snack.
Well, he was eating the rest of his sandwich and an apple.
He has an apple now.
Oh, my God.
Destruction makes
him
hungry.
Thing he rationed his food.
I wonder if this was funded by, like, the apple trees of Germany or something. No, like,
the apple trees of Germany. The famous apple trees of
the
Germany.
The producer's sales organization struck a deal with the Apple Corps.
Yes.
Bring me the Macintosh.
I want a Red Delicious. We do not have a Red Delicious.
There's no such thing as delicious in Germany.
We have Granny Smith.
You will have green apple.
There is red practical and green practical.
We have Granny Gunther. We'll have to name her Smith for the American version.
So Atreyu approaches the childlike Empress, and he's saying that he's failed.
I failed you.
He's failed the mission.
I failed you.
But she says, no, you haven't, because you've brought him with you.
Falcor.
The earthling child. The only way to get back is with an earthly child. And Bastion realizes they're talking about him. It took him the whole 90 minutes to realize they're talking about him.
The more I see this, though, the more I'm like, these actors probably filmed their scenes in a span of like half an hour each.
This is probably a very short shoot.
And then they strung it together to make an hour and a half movie.
But this is when we learn about the truth about the never-ending story.
The never-ending story.
And whenever they bring up the title of the movie, that's when we play a clip.
Doesn't realize he's already a part of the never-ending story.
The never-ending story? What's that?
Just as he is sharing all your adventures, others are sharing his. They were with him when he hid from the boys in the bookstore.
But that's impossible!
They were with him when he took the book with the Orin symbol on the cover, in which he's reading his own story right now.
So yeah, the Empress brings up all of Bastion's kind of story throughout the movie, and he's like, what? What are you talking about? This can't be happening. So he's freaking out.
I do have to say, I was a little distracted in this scene because the art director designing like the patterns behind the childlike Empress and behind Atreyu, I seem to be a little Georgia O'Keeffe inspired,
oh, really?
If you will.
Okay.
Like there's a lot of...
I didn't really notice that, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that at all.
There's a lot of shapes happening.
It's a lot of shapes.
Oh, shapes. Maybe it's German. I don't know.
So the ivory tower starts breaking after this. And again, Bastion's he's just not believing it. He doesn't understand. And she keeps saying, the world's going to end. You know, he just has to believe.
He's got to say a name.
He's got to say the name. He just has to say it. He's got to call it out. And that same window crashes open. And then Bastion goes to the window. He says he's going to do it. He calls out into the storm. And he says the following. So Bastion calls out the name. Now,
I never
this
got
point
the name.
Is very... Well, first, every time I saw this movie, I couldn't decipher it.
No.
But I had read some things on the internet, and I do kind of hear what they proclaim he says. I do kind of hear it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you think like maybe his mom was just like a child of the 60s. It sounds like he yells out, Moon Child.
I thought he was saying child. Moon Pie.
Moon Pie would be good, too.
No, he's yelling out Moon Child.
He yells out Moon Child.
You've ruined my childhood.
Which you think about, his mom's name
maybe
is
he yelled
Moon
out
Child
Ruin
Buck.
Child. Like, that's ruin much, childhood.
That's not much better.
Ruin Child.
Ruining your childhood.
I thought it was like Marlene.
He's
or
talking
something.
About Falcor.
I was going to say, I wish his mom's name was...
Ruin Child.
I wish his mom's name was Falcor.
Oh, my God, that'd be awesome.
But no, it sounds like he yells out Moonchild.
He should have just yelled out, like, Estelle!
Estelle! Hey, I bet.
I hate that guy.
Bucks. Gina!
So, Bastion yells out this name. Everything goes dark. A candle lights. He's in the room with the Empress. And she hands him one grain of sand, and she says, this is all of that's left of Fantasia. But it can rise again. It can arise through Bastion's wishes and dreams. And he can make as many wishes as he wants. As he makes the wishes, Fantasia will grow again. So she's like, wish, Bastion, what? Do you have an idea for a wish? And Bastion does. And he makes the wish. And he's on Falcor!
This is the best part of the movie. I remember this. I remember, I'm like... He's riding Falcor.
He's riding Falcor, and he's getting back at the bullies.
Yes.
But first, he brings back the world of Fantasia.
He does. Yeah, because he goes by
the Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion and the Tin Man.
Past Atreyu.
Yep, on Artax.
On Artax is back, yep.
I guess he's not sad anymore.
Not sad anymore, and he's recreated the world, and then as his second wish...
Yeah. Wish number one, bring back reality. Wish number two, break the binds of reality.
And mess up some...
And get some bullies to jump in a dumpster full of hay.
And this scene was very interesting because seeing the scene again, having not seen this movie in many years, as he's coming down through the streets of New York, everyone else is like, it's a monster. Like, everyone else on the sidewalk are freaking out about Falcor coming down. The bullies, especially, because they see it, but all the bystanders are like, there is a monster coming down, which was pretty funny, I thought. You know, that they were reacting to it, too. They're like, there is something supernatural hitting New York.
What is going
right
on
now?
Right now?
Which I didn't notice the first time around. So he takes off. He chases after the bullies. And then the epilogue of the movie, the narration from a voice that we have not heard throughout the entire movie, tells us the following.
Past you made many other wishes and had many other amazing adventures before he finally returned to the ordinary world. But that's another story.
So this voice that we haven't heard the entire movie wraps it up for us. Thanks, voice.
So basically, in the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie, you got the recap from the wolf, the final thing from him, and it was like, oh, that was the whole
most
movie.
More things
most
happened.
Of the disposition happened.
And his father never noticed that he wasn't coming home anymore.
Turn around, Parent Nicholas.
Yes.
The end.
The end.
So, guys, overall thoughts?
I just remember the end of the movie when he was riding Falcor. It just
makes you think
me
of Family Guy, right?
It was Family Guy. Peter totally riding Family Guy. Yeah!
Well, there is a
you're getting too heavy, Peter.
Yeah! There is a bit of a resurgence, because wasn't there a there's some kind of music streaming site that was like you can download the theme song to Neverending Story, and it shows a guy on Falcor. Kind of did like a callback type of thing. You've seen that commercial?
Yeah.
So it's come back around. Like, obviously,
it's
a big
streamed this many times per day.
It's obviously like it's in the zeitgeist of like pop culture. So
yeah, it pops in and every now and again. And it's like, I remember it being such a, like a game-changing film. Like
as a kid, it was.
Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, damn it. Why did I watch this again?
So you weren't a big fan of it this time around, right?
No, here's the thing. I think if they were to redo it today, it would be so much better. It'd be perfect to redo. It's one of those movies where it needed the effects.
Here's the thing, the storyline. Well,
I mean,
that's
the story
thing I was
gonna
ask you.
Terrible.
So Rick and Brian, I know there were a lot of like obstacles and reservations you had about this watching this again. Do you think it was more the story parts or the effects parts that were you had the biggest issues with?
Both.
Like
100% both.
As a kid, you're a lot more forgiving of both sides of that.
That's true.
So you don't pick up on the fact that the story is weak.
Yeah, the fantasy exists. Yeah,
because they don't really build the conflict. They don't really give you a sense of why Atreyu's on the quest. Like it's like, oh, you got to do some stuff to save the princess. Like, give me more concrete tasks. Go here, and oh, that didn't work, so go somewhere else.
Well, I feel like you would argue, too, that as movie came out in 84, that with many movies we watched as children, you can almost forgive effects a little bit, because those were the...
Those were
the advances of the time, but there's kind of no excuse for story plot holes. You know, you can't dance around those at the time, but if you're doing the best you can with effects, you can put your mind in the mindset of the time of the effects period and be like, well, this is what you had to work with at the time.
Yeah.
But plot can kind of be the issue where like there's no excuse for plot issues.
But one end on the effects side is just how small the movie feels.
I mean,
like, this is a fantasy movie, and it should feel
teeny weeny.
It should feel large. It should feel epic. And
rock bite.
Due to the limited sets that they use, relying on
repeating
like
oracles,
a night backdrop,
repeating backdrops, repeating video. I
props.
Mean, like actual, like here's a picture of a sky. Hey, that sky was orange in the beginning. Hey, let's just make it blue now. Same exact sky.
Yeah, I picked that up too, yeah. If you threw out story plot holes and effects issues for the time, do you still consider this a fun movie at all?
Watching it again lost something on me. The storyline is okay. It's a kid reading a book, immersing himself in a story because his mother has passed away, and the story is real.
He's an early Peter Quill.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right. And Gamora is there with Gamora.
Gamora is there.
Yeah. To an extent, I'll give him a pass, but it lost something. It wasn't as fun, you know, watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something where the effects aren't the greatest when you can actually see the guy in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle mask in the first one. The story is better, so the movie holds up more. This story has so many holes, it just doesn't hold up as well as I think it should have.
I got
Which is surprising to me because, you know, being based on a novel, I feel like the story should be one of the strong points. And I don't know if it was just that there was a lot of scenes that they couldn't film because of budget reasons. I know that there was at least a few sequences that they that they couldn't.
The third build was first bully. Like, literally, in this movie, the third build
was
first bully.
Well, I think they were billing in terms of appearance.
Yeah.
No.
Like,
even
because
in IMDb, it says
Bastion, Major Dad, and then the bullies in terms
but
of appearance.
Yeah, Noah Hathaway, I think, shows up third, doesn't
he? Oh, maybe. I don't know. I mean, like, literally, I think this movie
So what you guys speak to the idea that, now, granted, maybe many Cinemaniacs of her age have not gone back and watched this movie.
Don't watch it.
But, no, hold on. Let me ask the question before. Many of the Cinemaniacs of our age have this movie in their memory in such high regard. Thinking back upon it, what do you think is the reason behind that? That this movie seems so cherished, although many of them probably haven't gone back and reviewed it since then.
I think it's become more of a cult hit, and it's coming into, you know, it's being shown on Family Guy, it's being shown on certain things where you're bringing it back
and
you're like, yeah, it's just a pop culture reference where people are like, oh, I remember that movie too.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a great movie. Yeah.
But I think it's just like, it's just more boasting. Hey, I remember this movie. Versus,
I think so.
Hey, this movie is still
great. Because ask somebody who's like, oh my God, that movie is the best. When's the last time you saw it? 1986.
Yeah, right.
I think some of it is also, like, this was probably a lot of kids' first exposure to fantasy.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
okay.
That is true,
like,
yeah.
I mean, you got Star Wars.
But Star Wars, you put in the sci-fi,
that's
space
sci-fi
opera.
Say, yeah, right. This is a fantasy world.
Like, yeah, this is where you're getting
like,
into
like,
the dragons.
Lord of the Rings that falls into fantasy.
Yeah.
You got
like,
all right.
Star Wars, Star
I think
Trek, opposite
as a kid,
sci-fi.
As a kid, it was probably like Neverending Story and the animated Hobbit as the movies that I had familiarity with at this
Dark
age.
Dark Crystal. Yep.
I think Rick hits it on the head with the Family Guy reference, because I think it went from being like something where you go, oh, remember the rock biter, to, hey, Falcor, like, and that's just the point of reference. It's turned into, and that's, I think, the key with a lot of the nostalgia about our youth is it's the Goat Boy sketch. It's the, hey, remember,
hey, remember
the 80s? Like, it's,
hey, remember the Super Bowl shuffle dance?
Exactly. Yeah. It's little more than that. And that is partially the Family Guy effect of
like
just
pastiche.
Here's the thing that happened.
And
you, that passes
and if you
as
remember
a,
it
as
like
comedy.
Me, we're in the same club.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I get that. That means I'm understand the joke versus
you practically remember that you were at the movie theater at the age
exactly.
of 3.
That's the thing, I had a false memory. So
you're just implanting stuff. Yeah.
Well, we'll get into some of those sequels, but why don't we touch upon, if you keep saying, if they did a remake of this movie, or if it came out today, what might be some products we might kind of market to try to get into it? The first thing I was thinking about, you remember in the 80s, early 90s, the big thing was like the pet rock, like the gag gifts you always found at Spencer Gifts or anything like that.
Wasn't that like the 70s?
No. 80s. Totally 80s.
No, I'm guaranteeing it's 70s. Your parents
must have
gotten...
I'm arguing the point of when the pet rock came out.
Oh, all right.
My idea is the pet rock biter.
Yeah, make sure it's animatronic.
Yeah, animatronic. As you said.
Listen, we've been drinking.
I could almost see, which might be a little creepy, but I could almost see, you know how they have those animal pillows that some people put around their necks when they go to sleep on planes?
Falcor?
A Falcor one.
I was actually thinking the same
thing. A Falcor body pillow?
Yeah. Yes. I was actually
thinking. A Falcor anime love pillow?
With luck.
No.
Oh.
What else
I
can
like children.
I would, you know.
Keys to the school attics.
The never ending story itself, the book, if you had two, they could be kind of cool bookends that you could put at the end of your books to kind of just, you know, organize them.
We just got really adult. It was just like, on our bookshelf.
Because we talk about books?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You should stop that. We're a movie podcast.
How about some Major Dad egg and orange juice?
That's what I was thinking.
Put it in a bottle.
Eggs and orange juice.
And big blocks of butter.
A big stick of butter. I can't believe it's not big stick of butter.
Spray.
Wonderful.
Like I'm trying
to, I think the ultimate answer to what merchandise there should be is
it's got
to
be
the
Falcor.
Nothing.
Oh, so no products.
Just no products.
No products.
So we should sell
because,
a box
because
of
this
nothing.
Should be this should be the type of movie where it's about rediscovering the fantasy and the imaginary and the stuff in your head versus having the tangible products. And that's what the remake would be about. It would be kind of an anti-consumerism, unplug, rediscover.
You're ruining
reading
my childhood
and
again.
Ruined child.
No,
that's my mom's name.
I want.
And on that note, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Rick and Brian, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. Good night.
Goodbye.
I'm gonna yell the name of my mom, Mrs. Chip!
Her full name is Atreo Chip.
Mrs. Belvedere Chip.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast and our full movie reviews of The Neverending Story. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5 Bin P-O-D, like us on Facebook, or email us at thefivedollarbin.podcast@gmail.com. Download episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not give a rating and a review? Awa, thank ya. For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, like our September workshop on Wednesday the 14th, you can visit natickimprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. Well, that's it for this week, Cinemaniacs. Until next time, hasta la vista, babies, moonchild, Bastion.